Whiskey is for drinking, water is for fighting. After 3 years of drought, the fight is on for what's left of California's water, and the casualties are everywhere. This great thirst of ours leads us to ask, who should get the water, farms or fish?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 657th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Elias Caius who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones.
Hello.
Folks, California is at the end of a three-year drought, and the fight is on for what's left of the Golden State's water. The fight is between farming and fishing, with the state's other interests kind of falling in behind. The casualties suffered in the fight between farming and fishing for water are truly catastrophic. In farming, hundreds of thousands of acres of Central Valley farmland have been abandoned. Tens of thousands have lost their work. Infrastructure is closing up shop and moving out of the state. And local food banks feed hungry farm worker families food manufactured in China. In fishing, there are no boats in the water, as the commercial salmon season has been canceled for 2 years running. California's entire commercial fleet is at anchor, and the 2,000 businesses that support the fishery idle along with empty parking lots. Yes, whiskey is for drinking, and water is for fighting. And today we pause to ask, who should win the fight for what's left of California's water, farms or fish? And who better to ask than a farmer girl and a fisherman? We'll start with our farmer girl, Sarah Wolf, a farmer and a spokeswoman for the Westlands Water District. Welcome to the Food Chain, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. Your family's been in farming for quite a while?
We have. For multiple generations, we've been farming on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley in Fresno County.
Okay, folks, consider the long, California's long Central Valley and divide it in half at the middle, somewhere around, what, Sacramento, kind of?
Mm-hmm.
And then the south part of that is called the San Joaquin Valley.
That's correct.
Right? Now divide it in half lengthwise. You have the west side and the east side, right? So what we're trying to talk about today is kind of the west side of the San Joaquin Valley, which
exactly.
which is one of the, I think, most fecund valleys in the entire earth, bar none.
That's right. It's one of the unique growing regions of the world with a Mediterranean climate that is unique to the United States here.
Yep. They call this the Westlands Water District?
That's correct.
Where does that water come from?
Westlands Water District's water is a federal contract water, and it originates at Shasta Dam, north of Sacramento, and it's held there and released down the Sacramento River into the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and makes its way through the delta to the southernmost tip of the delta, where there are pumping facilities owned by the federal government. They pump the water out there and into a series of canals and reservoirs and deliver it to two-thirds of the state of California, and that's how our water gets to us.
They say that in California, water flows uphill to money. Is that true?
To some degree, it's true, but unfortunately, the water prices have gotten so high, the money typically only lies in the urban centers now. It's very, very expensive to get water anywhere in California today. And, for example, for agriculture purposes, we are paying upwards of $100 and sometimes $400 an acre foot for water. Very few crops can support that kind of expense.
Okay, good. And you're paying for that water, aren't you?
We are. We pay directly for it, for the delivery and the water itself.
Okay, also with us today, folks, we have a fisherman, Dick Poole, who is the owner of Pro Troll Fishing Tackle and also a spokesperson for the Water for Fish. Welcome to the Food Chain, Dick. Are you there? Let's see, I probably didn't push the right button there. Yes, I did. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, good. Welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
Pro Troll Tackle. What do you make?
We've been in business 31 years, and we manufacture fishing equipment, primarily lures.
Mm-hmm.
And 80% of our business goes to the salmon industry.
And that industry is?
The recreational, commercial salmon industries. California is a huge market. We sell all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska, British Columbia, UK, Scandinavia, Russia, everywhere there are salmon.
Well, let me ask you this, Dick. It might seem like a stupid question, but I have to ask them once in a while. Why are we worried about fish? Because there's a whole ocean full of water.
You bet. And the ocean can be very, very productive. We are worried about fish because salmon are what they call anadromous fish. They come into the fresh water to spawn, lay their eggs, and reproduce. And then the small, what they call smolts and so on, go back to the ocean. And a typical Chinook salmon in the California system lives 3 years, spends almost a year in the freshwater working its way to the ocean, and then grows very rapidly, and after 3 years comes back, spawns in the exact same place that it was born, and then the adult dies and the system replenishes.
Okay. So then there is a worry about fish and salmon and water, because salmon need the fresh water to spawn and to procreate, and without that fresh water, what happens to the salmon fishing season?
Without that fresh water or the water needs of the salmon in the fresh water, the life cycle is broken and the fish diminish, and then that's what has happened to us in California. The fishing season, the fish became so diminished that the federal government had to close the fishing season in an effort to keep extinctions from taking place.
So we're looking at a lot of extinctions taking place around California these days. We're looking at agriculture becoming extinct. We're looking at fishing becoming extinct, and it's all because of we're not getting enough water out of that incredible California water system that begins way up there in the mountains in the northern part of the valley, the Shasta Dam, and the Sacramento River comes out and goes through the Sacramento Delta and then out San Francisco Bay. Truly one of nature's great engineering marvels. And yet we're at a point now where we're stretching that resource to the point where it's almost breaking. I'd like to ask you a little bit. I've read so much about the calamity that's happening here in California and wonder if it could be true. Sarah Wolf, as a farmer on the West Side, are you seeing the devastation that we're hearing about in the news?
Oh, without question. You see it every day, and we've seen it for well over 18 months, you know, on to 2 years. There are...
And this is as a consequence of the federal judge turning the spigot off to agriculture.
That's correct. He took actions to try to protect the Delta smelt and regulated how much pumping could occur in the Delta from those federal and state facilities I mentioned. And what has occurred is because of the lack of water being delivered to agriculture in the San Joaquin Valley, unemployment levels have skyrocketed because we're not farming as many acres, so we don't employ as many people as we used to. And we have 40% unemployment in numerous cities throughout the San Joaquin.
40% unemployment.
And that's not just one community. It's multiple communities that dot the west side of the San Joaquin Valley.
So that's devastating.
It's devastating. I mean, a perfect example is the Community Food Bank, which services three counties in our area, has been giving upwards of 1 million pounds of food per month for the last year. On average, prior to this, they were giving less than 500 pounds of food per month.
And we understand that some of this food has been coming from China. Carrots from China for farm workers in the Central Valley.
Where they grow carrots. And so it's very
unbelievable.
Disturbing. Yes. One of our farmers said if he had had the water supply, he could have produced, I think it was three times as much carrots as they were giving away in one setting. And unfortunately, he didn't have the water supply to produce those carrots.
Okay. Dick Poole. What is happening with the commercial salmon fishing fishery?
Well,
You're about in the same shape, aren't you?
We are. Instead of 40% unemployment, we have 100% unemployment. The salmon industry in California, and this includes both commercial and recreational, is about a $1.4 billion business. And so for the last 2 years, the state of California has lost $1.4 billion each year, and 23,000 people are unemployed, 100% unemployed. So, and it's because the salmon season was shut down.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come, we'll pick it right up when we come back. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Farms or fish? Who should get the water that's left in California? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Sarah Wolf, Dick Poole, you and I, right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've had the opportunity to visit some of the most productive farmland in the world, including the Great Nile Delta, birthplace of the Egyptian civilization. Also the Urubamba River Valley, birthplace of the Inca civilization. But nowhere on earth have I seen the productive capacity that I've seen and know to be in California's Great Central Valley. Absolutely magnificent piece of geography for farming and producing food. No place like it in the world. Similarly, right offside the California coast, we have some of the most spectacular salmon fishery in the world. I had the opportunity to be fishing for some of the giant halibut up in Alaska, and I was talking with the boat's captain and about how what a wonderful fishery he had, and he said, he looked at me and he said, "Wow, you know what you're sitting on there in the Monterey Bay of California with that magnificent marine canyon? That has to be the best salmon fishery in the world." And yet, here we are at a point where both our farming and our fisheries are essentially disappearing. We're feeding our farm workers in the Central Valley food manufactured in China. We're feeding our fishermen. I didn't know what our fishermen are eating anymore. But they're not eating salmon unless they're out there poaching it. So today we're pausing to ask what on earth is happening to us, and what can we do about it, and is there anything we can do about it? So when we left off, we were talking with Dick Poole about the situation with respect to the salmon fishing industry. Go ahead, Dick.
Yes, I was just going to point out one thing that hasn't been brought up yet. It's the drought. You know, that's partly why we were all pondering or caught in these very difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. But I think with the third year of the drought, the realities are that 28% of the water that's not being delivered is not being delivered because of the drought. And it's impacting farmers. It's impacting people like Sarah significant. We understand that. We share that problem. The drought is also impacting the salmon production. Salmon need certain amounts of water at certain times at certain temperatures, and in the drought they need basically cold water where they spawn, and in the drought a lot of the water has not been cold, so that's certainly part of the problem, and the drought is a big part of our current problem, whether you want to say salmon or or farming. The other thing, when we say food versus salmon or fish versus farms, we're really talking jobs versus job and food versus food. The salmon industry, the California salmon industry, as you pointed out, was huge. The salmon populations in California are second only to the Columbia River historically in the whole lower 48. The fish is premium, heavily demanded. A restaurant survey says that salmon is one of the most popular items on the whole menu. And of course, now it's only coming from Alaska and elsewhere. So,
or farmed.
Or farmed, although farmed salmon is certainly not the premium salmon of the
trophy. Spoken like a true fisherman.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Sarah and I were talking about before the show started about how what you just brought up, Dick, and the fact that your two industries that have exactly the same problem, and yet you somehow have been pitted against each other in this war for water. How were you pitted against each other?
Well, I think it goes back to the root of the problem. The root of the problem, in our opinion, is the state and federal governments.
Sarah, what are you smiling about?
I think we have a similar opinion.
Okay.
In Sarah's situation, there are things as water has been contracted over the year, and our root problem is that there's 8 times more water contracted for in the state than is available. Most of the rivers are tapped with dams, and most of the water in the state, other than when there's floods and so on, is pretty well tapped. And yet, the state and federal government went out and contracted, gave people like Sarah's organization and others contracts for 8 times more water than exists. And consequently, we're in a mess, and we're going to be in a mess until all this gets rationalized and worked out.
Well, that's an interesting one. Let's toss that to Sarah.
I would actually completely disagree that when the facilities were built, the reservoirs that were built and the pumping capacity were built to meet those demands of the contracts that they negotiated. And over time, we have reallocated and added new demands to that water supply, primarily for the environment. We did not, when the facilities were built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, we did not allocate any water to the environment.
Who thought about that then, right?
Exactly. Okay. That was not our objective, mm-hmm. our concern at that time. And we have clearly taken a different position, rightly so, that we need to focus on the environment. And water has been taken away from that existing capacity to meet those demands of the environment. And no new water has been made up or created or captured to meet those demands. And so we have new additional demands on the system that were not in place when the first contracts were written. And so, yes, we are overexposed. We have contracted too much at this point in time, mm-hmm. than we currently have capacity for. And so he's exactly right, Dick's exactly right, that we need to address that. However, the one area that continues to meet the demands of the environment are the agricultural users. And that's why we are seeing the impact today, and you're seeing other areas of the state that received 60 and even 100% of their water supply because federal agriculture users receive the full brunt of that demand on the environment. The environmental needs.
So they took away the water for the environment from agriculture.
That's right. And this year, the environmental contracted demands received 100% of their supply. So the wildlife refuges in California received 100%.
Okay, well, this leads me to an observation that I've made while just considering this radio program, and that is, it's like I said, you both, farming and fishing, share the same problem, and yet you have been kind of pitted against each other in the struggle for this water. And the group that seems to be doing a lot of the pitting is the city people. City people will always get enough water because they have the votes and to elect their politicians and elect their judges and everything else. And it seems to be that the environmental community that is engendered by the demand for us city people for nature has really been focused on helping the fish and not the farmers. Is that a fair thing to say, Dick?
Well, helping the fish. You know, it comes to a question. Sarah's right. Over the years, when all the dams were built way back when and so on, they built hatcheries to mitigate for the losses of the fish. And that has worked to a degree, and has not worked to a degree. So the question when you come to fish is, are you going to allow extinctions at what point? And some of these things, and I go back to the federal government of several years back, there were some very bad politically motivated biological opinions that said that we could deliver a lot more water to agriculture without having an impact on the fish. And that's simply, it was a politically motivated decision. It simply wasn't right. So you, if we're going to save these fish, and it's not only salmon, there are dozens and dozens of fish, I think if we don't solve some of these problems, California is headed for probably the largest extinction of fish ever to take place in the country.
And farmers.
Yes. So there have been the biological opinions have been straightened out. The courts have found that the old biological opinions were inappropriate, and some water has to be reserved for fish.
And thus the Delta smelt protection.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick this right up. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking about water for fish or farms. Can we find enough for both? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Sarah Wolf and Dick Poole. And you, right back. Well, folks, the Golden State of California is running short of water. And not just a little short, but a whole bunch short, because we're at the 3-year point in a prolonged drought, and things are parched indeed everywhere you look, and it's having an incredible impact, a catastrophic impact on agriculture and fishing, two of the mainstay industries of California, especially in these days when nobody can afford to manufacture anything in this state anymore, and they've all left for other greener pastures. Agriculture and fishing really are two of the industries that are holding this state up. And yet, out in the California's Great Central Valley, hundreds of thousands of acres have been abandoned. Tens of thousands have lost their work. Infrastructure has left the state for greener pastures, and food banks feed farm families, food manufactured in China. Oh, man, what a crime. Out in the Pacific coast, the California salmon fishing fleet is idled, and the 2,000 businesses that serve that industry are out of work. So the unemployed people everywhere, 27,000 in fishing and, 40, 50, 60,000 in agriculture, because we're short of water. And so today we ask, what should we do with that water? With us we have Dick Poole. Dick, did you want to finish up?
Well, let's see. Where were we, Michael? I just point out one thing. The ocean is a tremendous resource for fish. California, in its coastal areas, produces by orders of magnitude more seafood than any state in the country. Salmon is almost the top of the list. The productive salmon industry. The commercial salmon industry, we get this turned around, is capable of producing 15 million, 20 million pounds of premium Chinook salmon every year. Mm-hmm. So we are looking at a big potential, but we have to solve some of these problems.
Yeah, and not only in the salmon fishery, but in agriculture too, some of the most fecund farmland in the entire world being idled. So that's the question. We're going to go to the phones if you'd like to participate. We have a couple of real good people to talk with today, and you're invited to pick up your phones and join us at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Scott. Scott, welcome to The Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Excellent show. It's an appropriate place for this conversation since you're broadcasting from Santa Cruz, California, a temperate rainforest. in the San Lorenzo Mountains surrounding there. We certainly have enough water in California. If we seriously begin to save it, we could build dams. Instead of trying to tear down dams, we're having more and more people. We could even run the San Lorenzo River as an aqueduct all the way to Monterey with outlets for the fish. We have the technology for fish ladders, et cetera, or even a series of dams along the San Lorenzo, and expand the dams up north.
Mm-hmm. Well, dams don't seem to be in favor these days.
Well, in the name of environment, Michael, I see it as the government is at war with the American people, and what they're trying to do very successfully is unemploy us from 40 to 100%, to starve us, to kill our agriculturally, literally, and let our animals die, to make us reliant on government and China, to castrate our independence and self-sufficiency. It's a tragedy. We need to stand up and fight back and build dams.
Well, I'd say damn you, but I'd probably get in trouble, Scott.
Damn the San Lorenzo.
Thanks for the call,
God,
Scott.
God bless you, Michael.
Right.
Well, and
go ahead,
Michael,
Sarah.
I'd just like to say, you know, he has a very valid point. We're historically such innovators. We can fix these things. We are given a problem here in California and the United States in general, and we can solve these problems. There are technologies available. We can figure this out. There, you know, in the Delta, the health of the Delta is the most critical thing to both Dick salmon fishermen and to us in agriculture. If we don't figure out why all these species are dying and do something to fix it, we're never going to get anywhere. And today, all we're doing is turning the pumping facilities off. There are a number of other impacts that are affecting the health of the Delta. There's sewage going into the Delta. There's diversions, water diversions, other pumps that are there that don't have fish screens on them. There's a large number of factors that are impacting the Delta, and we're just not looking at them. And until we look at them and we truly address the problem holistically and figure out how do we engineer a way to ensure that there is health in the Delta and places for habitat and places for spawning for these species, we will not address any of these problems. And I think that's where we are today. We're just stopped. We're not doing anything.
Dick, how would you respond to that?
Well, let me go back to Scott's point, if I can.
Sure.
Well, I certainly agree with Sarah. There are a number of other problems in the Delta that need fixing, and there are umpteen studies on what the fish need, and some of those are being addressed. But Scott made a point. He said we have enough water. And the problem is, he said, build dams. And most of the rivers are now dammed. Almost, I forget, several hundred dams. Most of the rivers of Northern California are dammed. There are some opportunities. There's an evaluation to raise Shasta Dam by somewhere between 8 and 15 feet. And in heavy water years, that would create more water. In drought years, and more dams, there aren't any opportunities. But I wanted to go to Scott's point that conservation in our society, it's just a huge opportunity, and it's being evaluated. The legislature is dealing with bills that will bring that about. The average resident of California right now uses something like 150 gallons of water a day. In most other states, or a lot of other places, they use half of that or even less, down to 30 gallons a day, and lifestyle is okay. We have been spoiled with water. We are water wasters.
You know, California has been plumbed. It has this wonderful natural plumbing about it that, if you think about it, you know, the good Lord designed California for agriculture and fish.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And just how do we go about making it? I guess holistically is a good way of thinking about it. How do we pull all of these resources together so that we can have enough water for fish and for farms?
In our opinion, we've got to create more water, and it looks to us like the best opportunities are conservation with homeowners, certain conservation with agricultural, groundwater management, recycling. You know, a lot of the water districts are starting to recycle gray water. watering their golf courses and so on with gray water. These are huge opportunities.
And agriculture is all on drips now, right? It's pretty much all on drips.
Yeah. We have over 75% of our district is on drip irrigation.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the phones. We have a whole bunch of phone callers, and we're going to get to them all with Dick Poole and Sarah Wolf. And you, farms or fish? What do you think, folks? Where should we invest our remaining water? Should it go to farmers who grow our food? Should it go to the fishermen who catch our food? It's all about food, and it's all about water. And it's all about where we invest that water. So what do you think? Who should get it? Farms or fish? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, what do you think? Farms or fish? Which should get the remaining water and the water that's left over after 3 years of drought in the Golden State of California? We have Dick Poole with us. Dick is a manufacturer of professional salmon gear and other fishing gear sold around the world. But, gosh, he does a lot of business here in California. And also with us, Sarah Wolf, who is a farmer and a spokesperson for the Westlands Water District in the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. And both of our industries are in deep doo-doo, so which should get the rest of the water? Let's go to the phones and let's talk with Rory. Rory, welcome to the food chain.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I followed this situation as closely as I can, being involved with coastal agriculture here in Santa Cruz and Monterey.
Can it happen here?
You know, I think that, you know, it's frustrating in a because these water issues are hard for the average non-expert to pin down. We're relying on experts to tell us that we're running out of groundwater, or I'll give you an example here in Santa Cruz County. For years, they've been telling us we have saltwater intrusion on the coast and that, you know, that all the wells are becoming salty, but people continue to farm strawberries on the coast, and strawberries are a very salt-sensitive crop. So, yes, there are some wells that are too salty to use for strawberries, but most of them are fine. So I question the experts that are telling us that, you know, we're looking at a doomsday scenario. And I know from some people that fish salmon, not commercially, but for sport, I know last year when the season was closed, they were having to throw salmon back. They were catching them all over the place. So it seemed like they were plentiful last year. I wonder on these counts and the supply, are we being told the whole story?
Well, that's a good question, Sarah. Are we being told the whole story? Thanks for the call, Rory.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I would agree. I think that we're not being told the whole story. I think the science that we've observed and utilized in creating these biological opinions and mechanisms for delivering our water supply, we haven't looked at everything. As I mentioned, you know, all these factors in the Delta, they simply were not looked at when they wrote the biological opinion. They have, you know, they specifically chose which science they wanted to utilize. And I think that's unfortunate because...
That would be a first, huh?
We're not solving the problem here. We're just turning a knob that doesn't fix anything.
Dick, are we being fed the truth?
Well, I think so. Let me cite a number.
Okay.
There's four separate runs of salmon. The biggest one is what they call the fall run. That run of salmon return back to the rivers in the fall. In year 2002, 738,000 fall run salmon returned. If you look at the graph on what's happened since then, in 2008, 66,000 returned. That's a 90% drop. And the 66,000 is below the long-term number that you have to have if this species is going to be kept from extinction. So, you know, is that science? Well, it's actual counts. So then the reasons for all of these are where the science comes in.
That's what Rory was getting at. Is the science good, or yeah, are we kind of guessing?
Well, we're not guessing on the counts.
I know we're not guessing on the counts.
There are two
runs listed,
under the Endangered Species Act right now that are in highly subject to extinction.
This is something that Sarah brought up earlier. This smelt was only one fish listed as an endangered species, but there's a whole bunch of them waiting to be...
There's a number.
The salmon and steelhead, I think there's 6 or 8 of the runs listed now that are and you know, there in our mind, there's a huge difference between a commercially viable fish that goes for food and a smelt. Now, you know, I think 89% of the people in the country support the Endangered Species Act as important legislation. We don't want the smelt to go extinct. It's an indicator of other problems. But, you know, there's been more science in the Delta area, more studies, more money spent on science in the last 4 years, and I have, and others in our industry have pored over these. We have fairly a high level of confidence that the scientists have pinned down where these fish are being lost and why they're being lost. Sarah cited some of the reasons. There are other reasons.
Okay, so then,
and those are things we need to fix.
All right, so let's go quickly to Bob. Bob, welcome to the food chain.
Oh, good, great show, Michael. I have a comment and a question.
Go ahead.
Comment is, as a farmer rancher, I have to say that the fish are more delicate. Us farmers are not going to go extinct. We're going to evolve quickly and change our habits, hopefully, although it's hard to change a farmer's habit, I'm told. And as far as building dams and so on, you know, in changing our habits, there's a tremendous amount of rainfall that is not being utilized properly. I mean, we just had this huge storm and you know, that 90-whatever percent of it just went right into the ocean.
It has a way of doing that, doesn't
it? Yeah, and there's a huge difference between large dams and small dams, and it's the government that prevents the farmers from building small dams on their own property to spread the water out around the year.
Okay, quick question, and then we'll have to go to
a
break.
And the question is what is the role of the Chinese fishing fleet that's off the Pacific coast?
Ooh, that's a big one for Dick. Dick.
It seems like it's a twofer of them. If they can get the fish and stop us from producing food and sell us food, that's a twofer.
That's a big one for Dick when we get back. Thanks for the call, Bob. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Sarah Wolf and Dick Poole and you, 800-624-2665-831-479-1080. Question for Dick Poole when we get back. What impact is the Chinese fishing industry having on our fishing industry? Right back. Well, a whole bunch of people on the phones, lots of questions, lots of comments. What about it, folks? We're losing the two industries that actually hold the state up, agriculture and fishing. What's left? Moving paper from one side of the desk to the other? Is that how we're going to make our living? 800-642-665-831-479-1080. Dick Poole and Sarah Wolf. Dick, the last question was, what impact is the Chinese fishing industry having on our industry? Are they offshore catching all of our fish?
I don't think so. And the fish we're talking about, Michael, salmon and nearshore fish, you know, our government did what was right. This was 10 or 15 years ago, and moved our territorial limit to 200 miles out.
Right.
And most of these fish are well within that 200-mile limit. Now, you know, foreign vessels can fish outside the 200-mile limit, and they do, but they aren't catching the food fish we're talking.
Okay, that's fair enough.
They're heavily impacting things like tuna, what they call highly migratory fish. We know they're still killing whales. A lot of people are concerned about that. And there's international work to try to curb that. But I don't think it's a huge problem in what we're discussing today.
Fair enough. Then let's go quickly to Terry. Terry, welcome to The Food Chain. You've got Dick Poole and Sarah Wolf. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just had a question. Early in the show, you mentioned that both people mentioned that the government was having a major impact on trying to get these issues solved. And I've been reading up on this, and there was a Blue Ribbon Task Force put together by Governor Schwarzenegger, and they had they put out their summary in October of 2008 on the Delta Vision Strategic Plan. And I'm wondering what your guests think about that plan And I know there's a lot of talk in the assembly and whatnot about the cost, but mostly they're talking about more dams and release of more water to keep the delta fresh and upgrading the levees and all of that stuff. And I'm wondering if they, your guests, agree with this panel, and if they do, do they believe that the assembly will finally get going on doing what needs to be done, or is it going to be talked about some more?
Great question. Let's go quickly to Sarah. Is the government going to fix this?
One would hope. I'm not sure that they are actually going to be able to fix it. We would hope that they are, but I think she raises a great point. The Blue Ribbon Task Force had some excellent directives in their report when they finished, and one of which, it's been identified by numerous organizations that we do need more dams, we need to improve the health of the Delta and look at it holistically, and also we need to figure out a way through an isolated facility to bring the water from the north around the Delta so you don't negatively impact the health of the Delta.
Dick
and
Poole?
Deliver it to the south.
Dick Poole?
Yes, that was the Delta Vision process, and I agree. They had their dual objectives, more water reliability for agriculture and fixing the Delta. The legislature, as Sarah said, is struggling with how to implement that now. And there's great debates on how much more water can be created, how much should we rely on conservation. They're struggling with that. We all have our fingers crossed that we get a vision out of the state government that's going to start solving these problems. We're certainly not going to solve them with all the lawsuits going on now.
Okay, that'll take care of everything. Daniel, so sorry I missed you. Tammy missed you too. Please stay tuned. We'll catch you. You'll be first in line for the next edition of The Food Chain next week. And thank you, Dick Poole, and thank you, Sarah Wolf, and thank you all for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.